Okay, so this is, it's interesting how a chabura can come to happen. So I don't use my AOL account anymore because at a certain point in time I felt embarrassed to keep telling people that I have an AOL account. So yeah, I'm not judging. So I switched over to Gmail, but I do check like, I don't know, twice a week to see what's going on. Yeah, it's all good. Anyhow, so...
It's true.
Yeah, so I checked this week, and, you know, most of the email is from Staples, LinkedIn, Kew Garden Hills, and West Hempstead Jewels. So I clicked on one of the LinkedIn things, and it was I would say it's more of a Dvar Torah, or a thought, by Sharona Halickman from Israel, Torah, Reva, Sheva, something like that. I don't know. I accept everybody to follow and be linked into, so I'm really easy to connect with. But it was the first time I've ever read anything by her, and it was, I thought, a really fascinating question and a fascinating thought. So her question is, we know that the Haftorah for Sukkot is the Haftorah of Zechariah, which is the Haftorah of Gog and Magog. And she asks the question of, how does Gog and Magog connect to Sukkot? So that's what I want to try to do in our time tonight. So we'll start off with the Gemara in Sukkah, starting with the very first Mishnah. So Sukkah she gvo l'mal mesem amah psula. If a Sukkah is more than 20 amos high, it's pasul. Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay. She'ena gvo asar tfachim. If it's not 10 tfachim. So if it doesn't have three walls, v'shechamata meruba metzilato, or if it has more sun than shade, psula. Okay, so these are some of the things that we're pretty familiar with. A sukkah can't be too tall, it can't be too short, it needs a certain number of walls, we can't have excessive sun in there, and if it has any of those characteristics, it's possible. So the Gemara wants to know, like, where, what's the basis for that? So Rava says, mahacha. It says, "V'sukos teishvu shivas yamim." In Vayikra, it tells us that in Sukkos, you're going to sit for 7 days. So Amar Torah calls shivas ayamim tzei midiras keva v'shev bediras arai. For all 7 days, you need to leave your diras keva, right, your permanent house, and you come out into diras arai, into a temporary one. Ad esum ama adam osa diraso diras arai. Until, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Right. Let's even if you go according to the smallest amount of an amma, 1.5 feet, until 30 feet, people make a dirat arai. Right. People make temporary structures, but lamala me'asim amma, taller than 30 feet, ain adam osa dirato dirat arai ella dirat keva. Okay. So you could argue a little bit about that because most people. 30 feet is already like a pretty big deal, but I don't know, maybe like in the spirit of tents, right? Like a circus tent kind of thing. I don't know, it's probably not, you know, quite more than 30, 40 feet. Or maybe if it is that much taller than 30, 40 feet, it really is there to stay. Like the circus tent isn't going anywhere. So that's the Gemara's. The Gemara's answer, according to Rava, is that the basis for this is that a sukkah has to be dirat arai. It has to be temporary. Permanent doesn't work. Okay, so that's our Gemara. And so let's hold on to that for just a moment while we take a look at the Haftorah. So again, our question for tonight is, how does Milchemes Gog and Magog connect to sukkahs? So
back in the time of the Gemara, were people building homes, even regular homes, that high, other than palaces or arenas?
It's two stories.
Oh.
It's common to have two stories, yeah?
But yeah, two stories were short. They were,
well, they may have been. No, it may be. It's got to be 7 feet per story.
Right, I mean, you know.
So you're 14 feet. So a third story would be already over 20. It's not 10 amos, but yeah.
Right, I mean, to me, it's more a kind of like a tent that's like, you know, or any like a temporary structure that's 30 feet high. I'm saying from like our day's perspective, sounds a little bit much, right? But, yeah.
Well,
I mean, certainly housing back then was much smaller. Like, you know, you go to like, you go to the burnt house and, right? The base Hamikdash was taller than that. It was, yeah. And there was, I mean, no, it was definitely taller than 20 Amos. I don't want to say the wrong thing, but it was for sure at least 40 Amos, but it might have been like even significantly taller. But there, I mean, if you learn the Mishnayos and Midos, just to see, and that's where you'd find the answer for how tall it is. But the support it had, besides the stone and everything, I mean, they had really strong wooden columns on the inside to hold it all up.
Solomon's temple was 20 cubits in length, breadth, and height. And then it says, but there's another opinion that says it was 30 cubits height, but it had elevated floor.
Okay, so I think that I'm pretty sure that Bayit Sheni was taller than that.
Yes, that's just 45 meters, 150 feet.
That was a Herod thing. That wasn't
correct. That's second temple.
That wasn't a Hashem thing.
No, but I'm saying it's...
Were the dimensions from the first one?
You gotta figure Shlomo had the inspiration.
Yeah, inspiration. I don't think it was like laid out like the table was.
Right, I don't know if Hashem came and said like this is how big it has to be. Yeah.
Here's a different interpretation. 50 feet high was the primary, but there was something. There was a section that was 20 stories tall, 207 feet high. That the front section that we always.
All right, so I don't know. I mean, I would look towards the latter prakim of Midos to like get like what they felt it was. Okay, so again, back to the Haftorah. How does Milchemes Gog and Magog connect to Sukkos? So here is our Haftorah, Zechariah Yudalid. Hine Yom Bal Hashem V'chulak Shlalech B'kirbeich. The day of God has come, and the spoils will be split in your midst. V'safti Yakol Agoyim El Yerushalayim El Milchama. All the nations of the world will come to Yerushalayim for a battle, v'nil kadaha ir, and they will capture the city, v'nashasu abatim, and they will destroy the houses, v'anashim tishkavna, they'll rape the women, v'yatzach hatzia ir bagola, half of the city will go out into exile, v'yeter ha'am lo yikaret min ha'ir, and the rest of the city will not be split from the rest of the nation will not be split from the city. And God will then go and go to battle with these nations. Like he fought with them on the day that they came close. And their feet will be on Har HaZesim, so there'll be one mountain over. And the mountain will split, and they'll be on, you know, both sides. V'nastem gei harai ki yagia gei harim el atzal, v'nastem kasher nastem b'nei arash b'nei uziyahu melech yudah uvashem elokai kol kadoshim imach. And they'll run away like they did in the times of Uziyahu when they heard the earthquake, which was in Yeshaya's time. V'ya b'yomahu lo ye or ye karot v'kipa'on. Vaya yom echad hu yivadal Hashem yilo yom v'lalayla v'yileit erev ye'or. And one day it'll be where Hashem will be there. It won't be day, it won't be night. It'll be in the evening time. Vaya b'yom hu yitzumayim chayim Yerushalayim. And at that time, water will come out of Yerushalayim. Chetzem el yama kadmoni v'chetzem el yama acharon. So the different big bodies of water. V'chorev yeh. It's going to be in the winter time that this can happen. Vaya Hashem l'melech al kol aretz. V'yom hu yashem echad u'shmo echad. And God will be the king of the universe, right? On that day, the oneness of God and the oneness of his name will come through.
It's a single day, but didn't it say in the pasuk b'kayitzu before?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying by yomahu. It doesn't, meaning on that, when that happens, no, that's going to be... Right.
It's not a day. Because you get... You also
yeah, yeah.
In the twilight. It's not in the morning. Yeah. It's not the afternoon. It's not...
No, when all of this happens, everybody will be like, okay, we get it, right? God, you're definitely the one. Yisov kolaretz karava migevel rimon negev Yerushalayim v'ramah v'yeshva tatach l'mishar bin yamin ha-makom shar ha-shar yishon ha-shar ha-pinim mudal chananel ad yikve ha-melech. So all the people of the land will come to Yerushalayim and they'll settle there v'yashuva v'cheirim lo ye'od v'yashva Yerushalayim betach. And Yerushalayim will be safe and it will be secure. V'zot yah ha-magefa sh'yigof Hashem kol ha-mim asher tzavu Yerushalayim ha-meik b'saro v'hu omeid al ragla v'inav timakna b'choreim l'shono timak b'fiyem. Be a great plague and people will be sick. V'ya b'yom ahut yah mumat Hashem rabah b'hem v'chaziku ish yad re'eu v'alta yadu al yad re'eu. And at that time, the confusion will be great, and people will hold each other's hands and come up. V'gam yudati lachem Yerushalayim, usav chel goyim, saviv zahav v'chesed, v'gadim l'rov me'od. And Yehuda will fight Yerushalayim as well, and the chel goyim will collect a lot of gold and silver and clothing. V'chein tia magifat asusa perda gamal v'chamor v'chol bema. The animals will die as well. Asher yev machano rehema kamagifat azot. And whoever survives Milchemes Gog and Magog, that's why we get this Haftorah in on Sukkot. Whoever will survive the Milchemes Gog and Magog from the non-Jews, what will they do? They're going to come and celebrate Sukkot. Vayash al asher lo yalemit mishpachot aretz lo Yerushalayim shechavot l'melech Hashem tzakos v'lam yageshem. But those people that don't come up to Yerushalayim, what's going to happen? It's going to be bad. God is not going to give them rain. So Sukkot is the holiday. There's like a universal quality to Sukkot that makes the world relate to Sukkot. At the end of days, the Gemara tells us, or the Medrash tells us, what's going to happen? The non-Jews are going to say to God, you know, give us one mitzvah. If you would have given us one mitzvah, we would have done it. So God, what does God do? Fine, I'll give you sukkah. And what happens? They go onto the sukkah, and it's a hot day. And what happens? They kick the sukkah. So why is it? So I think it's really quite simple. The reason why sukkah is the one that we are able to identify with non-Jews is because how would you tie Pesach to the non-Jews? Pesach is the holiday where we left Egypt. Like, nobody sits there and says, oh, you know, it's also, like, agriculturally, like, whatever. Like, we don't sit there on Pesach and think about it. Even it's true, like, right, we bring the Korban HaOmer, which allows people to eat the new grain. But from our perspective, what is it really? Right? It's the time of us going free. Shavuos is Man Matan Torah Teinu. But what is Sukkot? It's Zman Simchatenu. It's a time of happiness. Okay? It's Chag HaSif. It's the end of the season. But it's the holiday that's most connected to the non-Jewish people. So the question is, why do the nations need to observe Sukkot? What is in it for them? Why does God care? And God makes it very clear in these last two Psukim. Those people that celebrate Sukkot, good. And what happens if they don't celebrate Sukkot? God gets angry at them and they won't have any rain. So, you know, you would think that, like, from a purely, like, self-serving perspective, like, if you are one of the non-Jewish nations, what are you going to do? You better believe you're going up to the Beis HaMikdash and you better believe that you're going to worship God on Sukkot, because in an agricultural society, the thought of not having any rain for the year is pretty bad. Okay, so our two questions are, how does the Haftorah of Milchemes Gog and Magog connect to Sukkot? And the second question is, how does it work out that the non-Jewish nations have to observe Sukkot?
Now, this whole Nevuah, whatever you want to call it, happened already or is yet to happen?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I don't know. Meaning, this is for sure, right? V'haya b'yom ha'hu yashem echad u'shmo echad. That part has not happened yet, right? That part hasn't. Milchemes Gog and Magog. I don't know. It's not so clear. I found that Rav Yoel ben Nun had I'm like at the very tail end of my book on Isaiah. It's good stuff. So at the very end, right, like Rav Yoel ben Nun takes over. He like dumps Rabbi Lau. It's no longer a collaborative effort. It's only him. So he says that he remembers as a kid. So Rav Yoel ben Nun, just like historically, like Dreamers, amazing book by, some guy from Brooklyn that changed his name to Very Israeli. Yossi Klein Halevi, right? He wrote amazing, amazing book. He chronicles like some of the famous soldiers that, or he made them famous for some of them, that liberated the old city. So he runs this spectrum. He takes on the one hand a Merkaz Haravnik, right? Straight out of Rav Kook's yeshiva, Rav Yoel ben Nun. And he takes someone, a music star-ish, who wrote a song. You're probably not quite as familiar with this one, but you're probably more familiar with its like its sister song, Yerushalayim Shel Barzel, which was not a spoof, but it was a knock on Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Like, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is how beautiful and everything was. And this guy was like, no, like the whole thing is like so messed up. And so Rav Yoel ben Nun, so he was one of the soldiers that was, he was like a 20-year-old guy-ish in 1967. So he was born in like, I don't know, somewhere in the early to mid-40s. So he tells the story that he remembers as a kid hearing that Herbert Samuel, who was the high, whatever, commissioner of Palestine in 1920, right after the Balfour Declaration was signed, that there was going to be a Jewish state, he came to, I believe, the Churva, before it was blown up again, and they gave him the Haftorah for Shabbos Nachamu. So can you imagine? He goes like, the feeling was that, like, Mashiach's on the doorstep. You have a Jewish leader who's now in charge of Israel, and he's reading the words Nachamu, Nachamu Ami from the old city. So Rav Yoel, why did I tell you that story? Because Rav Yoel ben Nun asks the question, he goes like, how does like Nevuah work? Like, there are certain things that we look at and say like, I don't know, when Zechariah says this, like, what is that talking about? When Yeshaya says something, what's it talking about? Sometimes like the Navi will pinpoint things that are like really impressive because they'll talk about a specific person that hasn't been born yet. So that's like taking a real leap of faith, and that you know is going to make it a much more convincing argument that like, ugh, this stuff is for sure from God. But what happens when you talk about like this? This could be any time. Like throughout Jewish history, Jerusalem has certainly spent many, many times in bloody battles, right? The Jewish people have been like, you know, beaten and whatever along the way. So could it be that there have been opportunities for Milchemes Gog and Magog? Maybe if Mashiach would have come at that point in time, we would have looked back and said, oh, you see, Vaya. Hashem el melech al kol haaretz, right? God is the king of the entire world. Now, what does that mean? This massive battle, right, was Milchemes Gog u'Magog. And I'm sure that if Corona, right, was the end of it, somebody could have looked at this Haftorah and said, you see, the promises that there's going to be a Magefa, right, there's going to be all kinds of terrible, you know, tragedy. And whatever, and the end, right? So I don't know, people. I think, you know, Henry, to your point, it seems like at least a part of this Nevuah didn't come yet. Okay, so let's take a look at the next source. So this is the obviously it's taking us back to Sefer Bamidbar, and it's going to be, right, we're going to read this at some point over the holiday of Sukkot, because it's the maftir. U'b'chamishasar yom l'chodesh ha'shvi mikra kodesh yelachem, kom lechas avodol lo tasu. On the 15th day of the 7th month, it's a holiday, you can't do melacha, right? That's tomorrow night. Sukkot, v'kravtem olai shereach nichoach l'Hashem, you're going to bring korbanos to Hashem, parim, b'nei bakar shlosha, sar ilim shnaim, kvasim b'nei shana arba, sar t'mimim, right? You're going to bring all these different animals. Some of them will stay the same, some of them will change. from the right from with each subsequent day. Okay, so interestingly, Rav Hirsch, and we'll look at Rav Hirsch to finish off, but Rav Hirsch says that Milchemes Gog and Magog comes along to try to fix something that mankind did wrong. So let's take a look at Bereishis Yud Aleph. Vayikol Aretz Safa Achad Udvarim Achadim. There was a time when everybody on earth was from the same language and of the same way of mind. They left the east and they headed out to this big valley, Be'eretz Shinar, in the land of Shinar, and they settled there. Right? People said to each other, they said, listen, let's make bricks and we'll make cement. And these will be our ingredients to make a something. Vayomru, they said, right? It's interesting. I never really thought about this, but it seems like there's two steps. First, they're like, whoa, we should build bricks. Not necessarily with an end game, right? And they're like, whoa, wait, hold on. We built bricks. Now we should build a tower, right? But until this point, right, they did not build with bricks. What did they build with? Think like,
Hides?
Right, I guess that would be tents, but I think when they wanted to build a little bit bigger, right, more ambitious than that, I think they went like with mud, right? So, right, like, obviously, you're not going to go that high because, you're done, right? So, yeah, but they all seem to be like, whoa, wait, if we could build bricks, let's build a tower, V'rosho B'Shamayim. And its head will be in the sky. Now, does that real? I mean, it doesn't really have to be that the head is in the sky, right? But if everybody is building,
well, it's called a skyscraper for a reason. So they're building a skyscraper.
Whatever you call it. But we, you know, like it's there is a. It's actually a, it's one of my. I went to Erie, Pennsylvania. I'm still not really sure why. The bus driver asked me on like the, you know, at the end of the trip, he goes like, why did we come here? I go, well, it was a lot of fun and we stayed in a nice hotel and did a couple cool things. He goes, could have done that a lot closer to New York. I'm like, fair. And that will go into my thinking next time we ever like consider going to Erie, Pennsylvania. But we were in Erie, Pennsylvania when Hank sent out the email that I was going to become the assistant principal. And I was literally on top of the world. I was in the highest point in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I actually told the story to the teachers. I was like, I felt like I was on top of the world. And then we went to do the Pirate Stadium tour later in the day. And the lady at like the checkout booth as I was paying was like, so what do you do? I'm like, I'm a teacher. And then I'm like, wait, actually I'm not. I guess I'm a principal now. And she like made a sneering sound at me. She's like, oh, you turned to the dark side. And I was like, all right, it kicked me off like the top of the world. But you know what the top of the world in Erie, Pennsylvania is? And this is like literally like the highest point in Erie, Pennsylvania. It's like 5-6 stories high. Yeah, I mean, it's gorgeous, right? Like, I mean, it's overlooking the lake. I mean, it's beautiful. You can see into Canada. Like, I mean, it's stunning. But, I mean, like, really? It's not much, like, by the New York City, like, skyline. But in Erie, like, it's big stuff because, whatever, that's their tallest building. I think when they built this building, Rosho Bashamayim, if everybody was building two-story huts, and they built one that was 15 stories, it's not necessarily kissing the sky, but everybody's like, whoa, Rosho Bashamayim, it's so much higher up. So that's their idea. God comes down to see the city and the Migdal that they built. Also, it's funny, I never noticed that also. Maybe we have a chabura for Parshas Noach, you know, already. Why is God lirosis a'ir? Who cares about the city, right? All you would need is the Migdal. That's all that God really cares about. God says, hey, this is what happens when they're one people with one tongue, one nation, And this is what they tried to do. Vatalo yibatzer mehem kol asher yazmu laso. God says, I refuse to let them do what they're trying to do. Hava neradav v'nav lasham satam eshal yishmu ish sat reyehu. What am I going to do? I'm going to come down, and I'm going to change the language so they won't understand each other. Vayavet Hashem otam misham v'pnecha laretz v'yachtu luvnot hayir. And what ends up happening is, the people, because they don't understand what everybody's talking about, they naturally separate by language. And that is where we have that people are no longer speaking the same languages. And because of that, this project stops. Now, another interesting question that I guess we could ponder is, did anybody stay in Shinar? Because if they did, why didn't they continue building it, right? Like, everything was there to be built, but it must be that the people felt...
We only had 1/70th the amount of people.
Right.
Okay, so it could be, right, the workforce was all of a sudden cut, but it could also be that that part of what they were doing was, it was an accomplishment that they were saying, we are unified, right, as one people. We represent all of humanity, and it's worth building. But if we only represent 1/70th of humanity, they're not. It's not worth it anymore. And Alken Karashma Bavel. That's why the place is called Bavel. Ki Sham Balal Hashem Sakol Aretz. Sham Havitzam Hashem Alpeni Kol Aretz. Because God sent them in all directions. What does this have to do with Sukkis? So Rav Hirsch says that they rebelled against God and his existence. That's what they say. They say, again, this is, you could argue that there's many different things that they did wrong, but one possibility is that at the moment of Migdal Babel, what the people did was they said, like, we don't need God. We're going to build something that's going to replace God. Now, what does that mean? We're going to fight God, go up to the sky and fight him? Maybe this building will represent an ideology that will replace God, right?
Why is it different than any other kind of worship?
Right, or maybe this building is in of itself an idol, right? They're building this massive idol, right? Or it's going to be, this tower is going to be so big and we're all going to worship it, right? All of these are possibilities. But what they're doing is they're saying, we're not interested in God and his existence. Instead, we're willing to say, it's us. We're the ones that are all-powerful. The days of Zechariah are the exact opposite. Sukkot, says Rav Hirsch, is a belief in Hashem. And what it comes to do is it comes to replace this foreign idea that God doesn't exist. So what is that? Okay, so that's like a loose connection. But how does that all tie into Gog and Magog? So take a look at Rav Hirsch. This is Rav Hirsch on the Maftir in Parshas Pinchas. So he says like this. Yeteira mikach, haynu ma'azim la'biyat ha'rayon haba. Hanavi Yechezkel meterat ha'milchamot ha'achronon sh'umot yarchu neged Hashem mifalav. So Yechezkel in Perek Lamed Chet, he describes the wars at the end of days that the nations will have against God and his people. V'manhig sheinahel milchamot eile karuei Gog, right? And the ruler that's going to be at that time is called Gog. And ein ze rachok lomar she Gog nigzar mishoresh Gagag. So he says it's not crazy to think that the shoresh of Gog, or that Gog comes in the shoresh Gagag, l'fichach humore al hayotzrut Gag. And therefore it comes from the root Gag, which is a roof. Nintzasha Gog, hi hipucha shel asuka. So Rav Hirsch says, it turns out that the idea of Gog is the exact opposite, therefore, of a sukkah. Shechein asuka hi akirui hara'ua v'achalash she'ena metukan al yidei uman. A sukkah is a structure that is shaky, it's weak, and probably the best way to describe it, she'ena mutkan al yidei uman, is not built by a craftsman. Right? I mean, some people are more handy than others, but for those people that are not terribly handy, Sukkos is when you're like, oh yeah, that's right, I went to Home Depot, right? And they're like, oh yeah, you're the once a year Home Depot people. We know, we're used to you, but it's not a crafted thing. And all of the history of mankind goes against this. Right? All of history says, no, we don't believe in the sukkah, but we believe in the Gog. If you think about it, like, what is mankind's contribution, right, in the greatest of civilizations, what do they tend to have is, right, the civilizations are gone, but what's still left? What are the relics of those societies? Right, some of those, the buildings and the ruins that exist, that they built, are the things that they left. The pyramids are still there, but the Egyptians are gone. Right, some of the massive buildings in Rome are still there, but the Romans, as we know, as we once knew them, are long gone. That's the idea. That's the idea of history is we don't believe in a god in the sukkah, but we believe in the Gog. Rayon mishubash echad matet hanoshu keder sheyesh lanashim et hakoach lamid defanot kirot melachtoim shenivnu bechozek. People think that they could really build walls. People think that their efforts can build strength. Kedei ligdor tchumam to hold their borders. And to protect them from their neighboring friends. And yet God has a different way. Now Rav Hirsch wrote this when Hirsch lived in what, the late 1800s or so? Just think about it. When Rav Hirsch wrote this, right, who were the empires that existed? The Ottomans, the Tsar, Austro-Hungarian Empire. And what happened? In one swoop, they were all gone. Says Rav Hirsch, that's Milchemes Gog and Magog. Gog and Magog say, we believe in what? The idea of Gog. That you're going to build something, and what you're going to build is real. And who beats them? So it's the sukkah. And that's where Gog and Magog ties so beautifully into Bavel. Because isn't that what Bavel believed in? We're going to build a Migdal v'Rosho b'Shamayim. What do they want to do? Na'aseh lanu shame. Why do you want to make a name for yourself? Because that's the recognition that I'm going to pass from this world, but my presence will be felt here forever because I will never fully leave so long as these buildings are around. That's what Gog and Magog says. Comes along the Torah and says, no, we don't believe in that. And that's why Vayad Kol Anotar Mikol Agoyim Abayim LaYushalayim Valu Midei Shana B'Shana L'Nishtachavol Melech Hashem Tzakos. The nations that will survive, the remnant of the world from Gog and Magog that will live, what will they have to do? V'Lachog Echag HaSukkot. They're going to have to celebrate Sukkos, because Sukkos is the reminder that we don't build Gog, but we build Sukkah. And the Sukkah is what is going to sustain us. Interestingly, what's the punishment for those nations that don't celebrate Sukkos? God's going to withhold rain. Right, that's the, you know, maybe it's a little bit harder for us. Yeah, we don't fully appreciate the power of rain the way they did, like in the times of Zechariah, but like, no rain meant death. Like, that was it. The world as you knew it, the society would not be able to last. That's what God says. If you really believe that you don't have to come and believe in the philosophy of Sukkah, but rather you're going to believe in the philosophy of Gog, no problem. See how long you last without water. And that perhaps is why What do we say on Sukkot? Haracham anu yakim lanu sukkas David hanofalet. But it's not, we don't talk about the Beis Hamikdash of Shlomo. But we talk about the sukkah of David that came down. Why? Because that's what we are. We do believe far more, and we praise and think much more of the sukkah than we do of anything else. My hope is that when we read these Haftorahs, and when we read the psukim that kind of hint either indirectly or like the Haftorah is very blunt to these brachos and these things that will happen, that we should really be able to see Bekarov Haracham and Yakim Lana Sukas David Nano Falat Bechain Hiratzo.
So you mentioned that it was a tikkun. So,
yeah.
So the tikkun was, what was the mistake in the Tower of Babel? Was that first two mitzvahs of Shemini Noach is acknowledge God and don't blaspheme God.
Okay.
So the Medrash was that that's what they were doing, right? They were either denying God or they would attack God, which is, I guess, a form of blasphemy.
Okay.
Denying his ownership and rulership of the entire world. And what's the deep gun at the end? It says, everyone has to come back together. The punishment was the 70 got separated. You were all one. You were all one up until this point in time, acknowledging that God was, we're following the Shema Mitzvahs B'nai Noach 1 and 2, that God was in the right place, and the Tikkun is all 70 have to come back together with that same acknowledgement.
Shkaya.